Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to a special episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, as always, Alex Pulowski. Oh, man. If you live in America and are against dictatorship, everything really sucks. Oh, gee. But we're not going to talk about that tonight. We're going to talk about SmackDown and how it sucked, because everything sucks. But also, this is the 100th episode of Sour Graps. The first Sour Graps I did on my cell phone in my sister-in-law's kitchen. This is back in October of last year. This is before COVID, when you could like go and visit family and whatever. My wife was at a business conference. She was traveling for business and brought me and the daughter along, and we all stayed at the sister-in-law's place. Really nice place in Indiana. And that was also back when you could travel for business and, you know, not contracted disease. But so the first ever one I did was on a little cell phone in my sister-in-law's kitchen, trying not to wake them above me. And if I told you that I would I expected it to last 100 episodes, basically a year, I think I would have been lying at the time. I did not know how this was going to go. I did not, and I give tremendous credit to Sean Rossap and to Jimmy Van. I did not think they were going to let me say whatever I wanted to say. I thought I was going to I'm going to push the envelope a little further, see where it goes. And if they tell me, yeah, you're not allowed to say that kind of that's cool. I don't want to do it anymore. Because I want to be able to be honest with you guys about how I feel and also how strongly I feel about the things I feel. And no pushback whatsoever. Everybody seems to really love it. So I guess I'm going to do 100 more of these. You know, as long as the world's still turning and there's still Vince is still kicking, putting this crap on the airwaves twice a week, I might as well talk shit about it. I mean, there you go. So yeah, 100 episodes. Thank you all for watching, listening, being part of the Fightful Faithful family, subscribing to Fightful Select, because that is, again, the best way to support everybody. I don't think anyone who isn't subscribed to Fightful Select can't even see this. Unless you guys are taking the video link and sharing it amongst your friends, in which case don't do that. Did I give everybody an idea of how to disseminate this to a larger audience? I don't want that. I want people to subscribe to Fightful Select for $5. $5. Again, I do 8 of these a month. $5. It's 80 cents an episode. Great deal. To celebrate the Sour Centennial, 100 episodes of sourness, I'm going to do a much requested Q&A session, which I have deemed Ask Sour Graps. You gotta get the K in there, because otherwise it just sounds like Ass Sour Graps, and the ass of Sour Graps is me. I am the ass of Sour Graps. So, the jackass of Sour Graps. So we're gonna do a little Q&A for people who have sent in questions to my Twitter using the hashtag AskSourGraps all week. And I see there are 7 of you who are currently viewing this right now. God bless you. While I'm talking about SmackDown, if you want to get in your questions in the chat, I will see if I can answer those as well, because SmackDown was just pretty generically shitty. And then we'll be able, I didn't get too many questions over the course of the week, so I'll be able to. Some of them are also unfair, like rank the top five ever. This. I don't know, guys. I don't have time to do research. I watch this shit. I yell about it. That's basically all the time I have to devote to this product, which is why I'm not the guy in charge of running the day-to-day operations like I used to be. Well, not in charge. Sean was in charge. But I was his right-hand man, and I still can't believe I did that job. It was really hard to do. It was. But then I had the kid, and I couldn't do that. Anyway, point is, for those of you watching, drop a question in the chat, and I'll see if I can get to it by the end of the night. I'm not looking at the chat right now, so don't ask me questions you want me to answer in the moment, because I'm not going to do that, because it messes me all up. I don't know if you guys realize this, but it's entirely stream of consciousness. I distract myself. I don't need distractions coming from somebody else. That's maybe why I hate distraction roll-ups and stuff so much. Because I feel it in my soul. Also, a little thing, a little nod. This is the t-shirt. Everyone loves my t-shirts. I don't say, like, everyone loves my t-shirts. Everyone seems to be like, hey, I really like that t-shirt. You have the best t-shirt collection, whatever. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that you and I have the same good taste. But this is a t-shirt. It says T-Man. T-Man! I pity the fool. And it looks like He-Man, but it's Mr. T. This is the t-shirt I was wearing on the first podcast I ever did with Sean Ross Sapp. It was Battleground 2016. July 24th, I believe, of 2016. This is so it's 100 episodes of Sour Graps, but I've been doing this shit for 4+ years. On Fightful, and I love every minute of it, and I can't thank them enough for letting me yak at you guys. So I think I've delayed talking about SmackDown enough. Lemonade. Lemonade is the official beverage of Sour Graps because it gives me that sour power. Yeah. I'm going to get a little swig of this. I don't think I'm going to down the whole thing, but you never know. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's that is some sour lemonade. Okay. Let us start the way SmackDown started, which is with the dirt sheet. Now, I touched on this a little bit. On the Raw show. But Miz apparently got Mandy Rose traded to Raw, where they have a lot of women who aren't being utilized properly. Chief among them, Bianca Belair. And just throwing somebody else over there doesn't seem like a lot of, they're going to help a lot. You're using Tamina in number one contendership matches. Mandy Rose should be there. You've already lost Sonya Deville to obviously take care of something very important in her life for however long that is. If she ever comes back to SmackDown. But you've lost that. That's not there anymore. Now you've moved Mandy Rose to Raw when she just... Obviously, this is not how you would want that to happen. But a lot of people were like, hey, Mandy and Sonya, could we move on from this program? Even though it's good, it's still it. Only one of you can come out on top, and that hurts the other one. And we want both of you to succeed because we need to see. Well, we know Sonya Deville is like an amazing future star, like future champion, multi-time champion. And I believe Mandy Rose has a lot of potential, but hasn't realized it yet. We need to see what she can do if you're really going to really push her. Putting her on Raw where she seems to be kind of, you know, she's not even there yet. Maybe she's dealing with the same kind of stuff considering she was a party to that. But she's, I don't know. Are you going to start, you know, show up, have her show up there and immediately get a title match versus Asuka? I don't know. Miz getting Mandy Rose traded because, you know, he knows people at USA and Fox because he's a TV star outside of here. Okay, fine. Anyway, he and Morrison are doing the thing, and they're trying their best. Damn it, they really are. I think the Miz is incredibly talented, and even he can't change this chicken shit into chicken salad. And God damn it, John Morrison is so brilliant in the ring, and you got him just being this dumb comedy sidekick to the Miz, and that's all he is to you guys. And that's, I don't know, that seems to be limiting what he can do, especially with the material they're giving to do, like, which is like, Miz will list something happening on SmackDown, and then Morrison gets on the mic and says, "Oh, that's dirty." And then Miz will say something else. "Oh, that's dirty. That is so dirty it needs a bath." Like, that's the best you guys got? Really? Anyway, so they list all the things that are happening on SmackDown, and we'll get to them. But first, they never get to them. But first, we got to talk about Mandy Rose being sent to Raw. And I did owe Otis a favor. He's not concentrating on being Mr. Money in the Bank. He's too worried about his girlfriend. So by sending her over to Raw, now he can concentrate on becoming a Universal Champion, which, of course, everybody wants for Otis. Obviously, that's not what Miz wants, but okay. And he says, and they do the thing where, like, "I've already heard from the guys over on Raw. Mandy has totally gotten over Otis, and this is the implication strongly implied by the words of The Miz and John Morrison. Again, not a direct quote, heavily, heavily implied. "Mandy Rose is taking so much dick from those boys on Raw. Oh, man, opening her legs for everybody. Sorry, Otis. Guess your girlfriend is now the brand bicycle. Because everybody on Raw gets a ride." Ha, ha, ha. Heavily implied that she's sleeping around with everybody on Raw. Because really, what are women wrestlers there for anyway, if not, you know, to get laid? Is the implication of this? I know these guys are heels and they say stupid shit, but like, you don't have to have them say that. They could say other things to get the, and I guess, whatever. It's 2020. Can we not do a thing where, like, the girls are just there to suck a dick? And it's fucking bad. I don't know. Anyway, the direct quote is, "They want to do more than smell that rose over there." Everyone really likes her over there, blah, blah, blah. Otis and Tucker come out, and Otis is angry. They run over there, and Otis chases them out of the ring. Tucker tosses Miz back in there, and Otis throws him down, and then Morrison gets in, and then Otis just dumps him back over the top rope, back down to the floor, which seems weird. Otis beats on Miz some more, and then Tucker's like, "Do it, buddy, do it! Gotta hit him with it, let's go!" And so he does the caterpillar. Which, again, It's a stupid fucking move. Stupid move. Doing the caterpillar on people? It's dumb. The dumb thing to do to really punish the guy you hate so much because he insinuated that your girlfriend was a slut? Yes. Flop on your belly three times and then drop the elbow on him. Ooh-wee, you punished that guy. Then there's the Vader bomb, which admittedly looks a lot more painful. Anyway. Otis beats up the Miz some more. And we rip off his... rip off his clothes as he's trying to run out of the ring. He rips off his clothes and he's wearing just tighty whities. Now, the significance of that, of course, is that during the dirt sheet, with the blah, 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 something as dirty as Otis's tighty whities. Oh, that's dirty. So the joke is that it's actually Miz who's wearing the tighty whities. Turnabout's fair play, I suppose. And of course, then Corey Graves is directed by, Vince from the back to say tidy whities five more times. Oh, look at him in his tidy whities. Those whities sure are tidy. Gosh, the tidy whities that Miz is wearing are the tidiest whities I've ever seen. Whitey tidies, tidy whities, whitey tidies, tidy whities, tidy tidy whitey whities. They said tidy whities too many times. That's what I'm saying. I know the joke is that I said it too many times just now, and that's I just wanted to clear that up. Anyway, so we go to commercial. Back from break, Caleb Braxton Morrison and Miz say this is all part of the plan. Caleb Braxton walks up. Miz answers his phone. Did you see it? Was it enough? So Miz gives a thumbs up to Morrison. They walk away. It's all part of the plan. We'll talk about that in a second. Hey, so Kalisto is part of a ska band now. That's the only thing. He's wearing a hat over his lucha mask. It looks like he's part of a lucha ska band. I don't want to go to your lucha party. If your lucha house party has a ska band, I'm out. I'm sorry. I'm out. I don't want to come to your lucha house party if it's got a lucha ska band. I don't. Sour. Kalisto and Dorado were giving conflicting directions to Grand Metalik for his match against Cesaro. So they've already announced at Clash of Champions we're going to get Lucha House Party versus Cesaro Nakamura. Fast forward to Grand Metalik loses this match. I mean, Dorado and Kalisto get ejected from ringside because they're arguing with each other too much, which seems weird. But Metalik loses this match to Cesaro. They're like, well, I don't know who Metalik listened to more, Lince Dorado or Kalisto, but either way, they gave him bad advice. I don't know who gave WWE advice on how to build a feud for these two teams, but they fucking suck at it. So you've already announced that Lucha House Party has a tag team title match versus Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura. And I understand there are literally no other tag teams. It's like Heavy Machinery, who I thought won a match a while ago that made them number one contenders, but they're not. I guess they're involved in this thing with Miz, but why did the Lucha House Party have a tag team match? Is it because one of them won a match against somebody a couple of weeks ago, but they've lost every other singles match? Why? Why are we doing this? I know the answer is because you have nobody else to do it, but what? What? I mean, this is not how you do this. I mean, you could do a thing where, like, if Grand Metalik wins this match versus Cesaro, that gives them the title shot, and then have Grand Metalik himself banish Lince Dorado and Kalisto. Both you guys get out of here. I'm going to do this on my own. And then he's able to do it because he doesn't have them incessantly talking about it. And then the entire time you're building up all next week's episode, you have Lince Dorado, Grand Metalik, and Kalisto all think they need to be in the people who are in the ring during the title match, right? Because only two of them could be in it. And so they all have to, like, draw straws. And the short straw, I mean, if you want to be literal, the short straw would be Kalisto. But the short straw gets pissy about how he should be in the match and the other one is. And so the short straw, probably Kalisto, at Night of Champions. Night of Champions? Clash of Champions? Clyde of Champions. Nash of Champions. At Nash of Champions, Kalisto ruins it for Dorado and Metalik. I mean, I could see that happening. Couldn't you? But the way you're building to that particular time is bad. It's bad. They have an interview with Jey Uso. Jey is good, except for the fact that he messed up his line to begin with. He says, Roman talked to me about, strike that, Paul Heyman talked to me about last week. He said it was all miscommunication, but he did say, like, I like the way he says, Roman's been throwing his weight around since they were kids. We're not kids anymore. So tonight I'm focused on our Samoan street fight match. I don't know what makes it Samoan other than the fact that one of the tag teams is made up of two Samoans. Is it if both tag teams were Samoan, would it be a Samoan sweet strike street fight? Because only one tag team is Samoan. So is it because it's on their home turf they get to call it a Samoan street fight? Why is it, are Samoan streets different than other streets? Than, let's say, Irish streets or Kansas City streets, which is where Corbin is from? Oh yeah, by the way, Sheamus and Baron Corbin were best friends last night, but it conveniently forgets the fact that, like, Sheamus hated King Corbin a month ago. Hated him. It doesn't matter. Who cares? Right? Fuck you for paying attention, basically. Matt Riddle does a video about how he can say bro a lot of different ways, like happy and sad and angry and scared and confident. I'm confident that WWE isn't going to do anything about this guy, considering that his lawsuit for, like, defamation or some shit against the woman who accused him of rape got thrown out of court because it was obvious he was fabricating evidence. So, like, she says you raped her, and you say no, it was consensual, but I was cheating on my wife, whatever. And so she says, also, you say, also, this bitch is crazy. She's been stalking me. She's been in this exact, she followed me to this one place in this thing. And then she presents evidence that no, she was out of the state at that time. She could not have possibly been where you said she was to stalk you. And so that gets the whole thing thrown out of court, you know, a legal proceeding. And you'd be like, so you go in to talk to the judge, and you're like, bro. And then the judge points out that you, like, I see here that you say that she was in Florida on the 9th of that month. Is that correct? Bro. But she here has presented an affidavit showing these plane tickets purchased and a hotel room that she paid for with a credit card in another state on the exact same day. Bro? So what I'm saying to you, Mr. Riddle, is I'm going to throw this whole thing out because it's obvious that you're fabricating evidence. Bro. See, I just did what he did. Only it was using his thing about the rape, you know, to make it more timely. Bro. I hate doing this, man. I loved watching Matt Riddle in NXT. I thought he was fucking electrifying, and what an amazing character work that he did and everything, and how he was this fucking surfer stoner out of the ring, but in the ring he was a goddamn murder machine. I loved everything about Matt Riddle. So I'm extra pissed because the dude that I loved so much turned out to be probably a filthy rapist. So I don't think I'm ever going to let it go. Bro. Anyway, it's a moment of bliss now with Alexa Bliss. she is interviewing Nikki Cross. So last week, Alexa used the Sister Abigail on Nikki on the outside of the ring during their fatal four-way match that also Tamina also in this match. And Nikki Cross eventually ended up hitting her finishing move on Lacey and rolling up Tamina. So she won. But Alexa had like peaced out after she hit the Sister Abigail. Fine. Good. We're all on the same page. Good. The announcers make sure we're on the same page like six times. So Alexa Bliss is out there. Nikki Cross comes out and says, "All right, Nikki. So I'm so happy for you, but we know what the show is about. And I have no filter. So I'm going to ask all the questions the fans want to know. So, do the fans really want to know what Cross's plan for the match is? I mean, is that what the fans want to know when you say it like that? When you say, I'm going to ask the questions because I have no filter and I know what the fans really want to know. When you say it like that, the only next possible question you could ask Nikki Cross is Killian Dane that hairy everywhere? Yeah. So what I'm saying is don't have your character, the person that we're talking about right now, like, don't have her say it like that. If the next question is, what is your strategy for your match versus Bayley? All of the fans want to know this, which is exactly why I said it like, all the fans want to know. It's weird. Anyway, I did appreciate that Nikki Cross was like, well, the only reason I lost all those matches to Bayley, and there were a lot of them, Nikki. The only reason I lost all those matches to Bayley was because Sasha Banks was there. And she's not there anymore. She's not there to watch Bayley's back. So now, what do you got, Bayley? You can't cheat. You can't use Sasha Banks to cheat for you, so I'm going to beat you. And I guarantee it. So does that answer your questions? Yeah, sure. So Nikki Cross, like, what's happened to you? Why are you like this? It took him a long time to get to that point. I would think like you would ask that at the beginning of the thing. But anyway, Bliss, I don't even know how to explain it because I don't even understand it. I feel some kind of change, but I don't know I don't know what to do. I feel this power coming over me. And then Lacey Evans comes out, and Lacey Evans is terrible. She's so terrible. I know I said she was a terrible babyface. She's somehow a worse heel because I think she resents having to play a heel when she got so excited to play a babyface, except for the fact that her babyface character was all, I'm a mom, and I'm a former Marine, and I own chickens. Therefore, you have to root for me, because I cook for my husband. That was her whole fucking babyface character. But she thinks, honestly thinks, that that should be enough to make you a babyface. So she's resentful. She's resentful that they've made her a heel again, which is the only reason I can see why she laughs like this. When you do that, it's what we call the old acting biz. indicating. You're not acting something. You're not even like the even acting something can be a little much. I'm acting like this. No, just be it. That's the thing you're supposed to do as an actor is like, I'm angry. I'm going to find a way to get angry. I'm going to use things that have happened in my life, you know, stuff that's going on in the world that you might be angry about, and you channel it and funnel it into being angry in the moment on stage or on camera. Acting like you're angry, okay, fine. Indicating is like, I'm basically like this. This is how I guess an angry person might say something. So I'm gonna like, I am angry. This is me being angry. I have furrowed my brow and I am making a mean face. So I am angry at you. You, I am angry at you because this is how angry people talk. That's indicating. If you were to say, hey, how would a bad guy, you know, somebody who was, you know, on the evil side, how would they laugh? You'd be like, oh, you mean how somebody would laugh like this? No, but like, that's not how a human be like that. Maybe that's like how some kind of like some evil cartoon. What is that? Is that like a giraffe? What animal are you? A sheep? What are you doing? Why are you doing that? Why are you pretending to be? It's fucking stupid. And she does this thing where she like just she takes a Kleenex or handkerchief out of her boobs and dabs her face way too hard in weird spots. She's pretending to be something because somebody told her to, as opposed to like actually trying to inhabit that idea. She's terrible. So she also flubs her line, which I would be lying if I didn't say that tickled me to watch her flub her line. That was great. But she says that oh honey, you nasty little thing. Your problem is you're too nice, you're too short, you're too weak, and you damn sure got no backbone. So Cross grabs Evan's handkerchief and blows her nose into it, but doesn't actually blow her nose into it. That's the problem I have with this as well. She's also indicating, how do you blow your nose into something? Well, you take it and you blow it and you actually try to blow snot into it. That's what you blow stuff. She does. She puts the handkerchief over her face and goes like this. She literally does that, but you can't see her mouth make that noise, but she just goes, like nobody, that's not blowing your nose. That's like making a weird noise with your mouth. Why are you pretending to blow your nose in her handkerchief? Blow your nose. Like if that's what you're doing to like show her, ah, gotcha. I'm going to get you. I'm going to blow my nose in your handkerchief. Just kidding. I'm going to fake like I'm doing it. I'm not actually going to do it. Fucking lame. So there's now I'm not nice because I made a weird funny noise into your handkerchief, says Cross. Then they start to brawl and they go to commercial. And now we get a Lacey Evans versus Nikki Cross match. And, oh boy, do I not care about this. Alexa Bliss is on commentary. Who cares? Nikki Cross is... I do appreciate that Alexa Bliss is doing actually subtle character work with this ridiculous thing they're asking her to do, which is to have been like... hypnotized by the fiend, and anytime somebody mentions him, she like just goes into a trance and attacks people with his move. That's ludicrous. That's a ridiculous thing for you to ask her to play, and she's honestly trying to do it. Not like meh, 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 or but honestly trying to portray that thing. That's hard to do when somebody asks you to do something stupid and it doesn't make any sense and you've got to make it work anyway. That's hard to do as a performer. She's trying her damnedest. I'm watching her try. That's good. It's not good that they're asking her to do it, but it's good that she's trying. And I like the whole time she's on commentary saying, hey, Nikki's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. Nikki. Why are you being so mean to Nikki? Like, in this persona, right now, she still is Nikki's best friend. The other persona that she is attacks people willy-nilly. She's a little crazy. So anyway, Cross hits her finisher off the top rope. She wins. Cross goes to the back, and Lacey Evans stumbles out of the ring, pulling herself on the nest table, and she says, she's yelling at you. She's yelling at, Graves and Cole. What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you looking at? Blah, blah, blah. And you, something, the Fiend. And when she says the Fiend, like, Bliss, like, starts looking off into space, and she gets up calmly, walks around, hits Lacey Evans with the Sister Abigail, and then walks to the back. It's obvious what they're doing. It's really obvious. Alexa Bliss hears the name The Fiend. It goes into a trance and attacks somebody with The Fiend's move. It's obvious. It's stupid. It's obvious. We know what we see. What's happening? Hopefully, we all respect Alexa Bliss for being a professional and doing this stupid thing as well as she can. It is ruined utterly by Michael Coleman. Like, did you see that? Lacey Evans said The Fiend, and right after Lacey Evans said The Fiend, Alexa Bliss went into some kind of trance and then hit Lacey Evans with The Fiend's move. The Sister Abigail, that's not Alexa Bliss's move. That's The Fiend's move. Oh my gosh, do you think there might be some connection between The Fiend and Alexa Bliss? I don't know, but it seems to me like there might be a connection. I'm just putting two and two together here, says Michael Cole, but I'm not sure. I shall let you, the viewer, decide whether or not this very obvious thing is obvious. You don't have to point it out to us, guys. We can see it. You dwelling on it really makes it impossible to watch. There's a really very well put together video package about Roman Reigns and the Usos, of them growing up together, and the history of the family. It's all narrated by Paul Heyman. It's really well done. It's incredibly well done. If you know the history, it's nothing new to you. But if you don't, it will certainly be like, oh wow, I had no idea. Definitely worth watching if you haven't seen it. So, Sasha Banks, who I don't know if you know this, was attacked by Bayley a couple weeks ago because they pointed it out like 14 times during the episode before this interview. And now at the Performance Center, Sasha Banks is sitting there to be interviewed wearing a neck brace, a very comical giant neck brace. It's one of those neck braces they would wear in 80s sitcoms when somebody was like trying to commit insurance fraud. Like, oh, I can't even move because of my giant neck brace. Oh, when I was in this car accident, Your Honor, this person, he ran me over and I have to wear this neck brace. And then as soon as they're not in front of the judge or the lawyers or the other person that they're trying to sue, they'd take the neck brace off and go, wow, that's, whew, it feels so much nicer. I'm so sweating under this fake neck brace I'm wearing. It's just comically oversized. So Sasha Banks tries she's getting emotional. She's trying to be emotional. And what that is I'm going to stop what I'm saying. Look over to the side. and try to make myself cry, but it's not working. And that's okay, because I'm not going to say anything for these 7 seconds while I'm trying to make myself cry. So basically she does that for a lot of it. Now, the substance of what she's saying makes a lot of sense. But I think they must be trying to push this fast, this match. I think it might be in Hell in a Cell that they're going to try and do this match. Which is, honestly, Hell in a Cell between Bayley and Sasha could be great. But it doesn't have to be that soon. You could. The next time they have a match against each other could be WrestleMania. Honestly. From now. It's September. September, October, November, December, January. January is the Royal Rumble. Sasha Banks wins the Royal Rumble. I would not be upset if the next match Sasha Banks wrestled was the Royal Rumble. Right? If she was off TV until then, won the Royal Rumble, picked Bayley, obviously, and had her match versus Bayley at WrestleMania. The reason I think that they're trying to push this fast is because they are not giving Sasha Banks any room to breathe. She went from being as heel as Bayley is to being attacked by Bayley, and now she's just... When I look at all of these things that we did together, you and me, as best friends, you and I, and now you think I'm useless? You don't have any use for me? Well, I'll tell you what. I will never forget how we sat here together in the Performance Center, and we said all the things we were going to do together. Together, I loved you so much, Vanessa, and it hurts me to my very core. It hurts me to my very core, Bayley, that you would do this to me. It's trying to build sympathy for her. And what I would just appreciate is that they didn't try to build sympathy too fast artificially and let us obviously go, well, that thing that you that Bayley did to her was terrible. And that's all we need. We don't need we can have Bayley, you know, Sasha slow play her babyface turn, you know? But like being disrespectful to Michael Cole. Why does she like Michael Cole anymore? I mean, I guess she one time she's like, I'm still here, ain't I? Yeah. I think she could still be pissy at Michael Cole and Corey Graves and everything. And anyway, this comes down to a point where Bayley attacks her again and beats her up again and rips off the neck brace and puts her in a steel chair to depilmanize her neck again. And this is, I've never wanted something so much in my life. That's hyperbole, but I don't know if you watched my stuff before. That's kind of my shtick, hyperbole. I have wanted things more in my life than this. But in that moment, oh, did I want this? I wanted somehow for a camera above everything to catch Sasha Banks in that chair, about to be pilmanized by Bayley, and I wanted her to look up at Bayley, and I wanted somehow for us to understand their eyes met, and Bayley hesitates, and I wanted Sasha to say to Bayley, bitch, you better hope you kill me. I wanted that so bad. I wanted Sasha, like the boss. I wanted that Sasha in that moment to be like, if you leave me breathing, I will come back and fuck up your Christmas. Like, I wanted that so bad. Bitch, you better hope you kill me, because if not, is the rest of that sentence. Because then, of course, everyone runs in like, Bayley, what are you doing? Don't murder Sasha. Stop. Bitch, you better hope you kill me. I wanted it so bad. Like that exact phrase. I mean, there's that classic thing. It's classic. It's a few years ago. Undertaker and Brock are having a pull-apart brawl in the ring, and one of them says, I forget which one, I'm going to kill you. And the other one says, you're going to have to. Which is the same basic idea. But I want more of the edge of Sasha Banks in this initial feud with Bayley. If you're going to do this, I don't need to be like, oh, I'm so wholesome now. Forget all the things that I did when I was terrible. Anyway. AJ Styles versus Sami Zayn. God, I missed Sami Zayn, but it doesn't look like Sami Zayn anymore. He's got the crazy hair and giant beard. The match is good. Sami Zayn's pissed to start because Greg Hamilton won't announce him as the actual champion. I loved the finish. I love the finish where Sammy is cheating, grabbing the tights, and the ref sees it and is like, "No, I can't let you do that. No, I'm not going to call that count that pinfall." So immediately after that, AJ rolls up Sammy against the tights, but the ref doesn't see AJ doing it. So Sammy's like, "What the hell? You let him get the tights, but he used your tights." No, he didn't. Yes, he did. He used the tights. I admit I used the tights. That's fine. You got me. He used the tights too. I thought that was great. And so Sammy. Then they start brawling after. He orders Greg Hamilton to announce him the winner and still the champion. So Jeff Hardy comes out and he kicks both of them. He kicks both their asses. And he brings out a ladder and he sets it up. And he says that I'm so sick and tired of this intercontinental title situation. I'm tired of being called a cheat, tired of being called a fraud. So we all assumed at Nash of Champions we were going to get a triple threat of AJ versus Sammy versus Jeff. I think we all assumed that was the case. But Jeff goes, ladder match. And I go, well, now I think I have the match I want to see the most. That and Roman versus Jay. Just because I still have a feeling they're going to do something wonky with that finish. But ladder match between like the king of all ladder matches, Jeff Hardy. The original king of the ladder match, let's say. And AJ, who's always great in a ladder match. And Sammy, who just fucking... he does not care if you break his spine. That's going to be a great fucking match. I like that a lot. So Otis and Tucker are backstage. A man walks in. And he gives Otis papers. And this is something... It's like... it's. I always talk about the Monday Night Monkey's Paw. Which is what we talk about, the thing on Raw where like you would want something like, oh boy, I sure hope I get to see Chad Gable on TV some more. You can, but we're going to call him Shorty G and he's going to dress like a toddler in a basketball uniform. That's the Monday Night Monkey's Paw. You be careful what you wish for because you're going to get it, but not how you wanted it. So Otis can't read is basically what we've learned from this. Because they give him papers and Tucker has to read the papers to him. You've been sued by the Miz. They're alleging emotional distress, destruction of personal property, creating an unsafe work environment, money in the bank negligence. And they say that the Dirt Sheet is a news program and you are violating their First Amendment rights. So you have to show up in court and get a lawyer or you forfeit your money in the bank briefcase. Now, I don't want Otis to be Mr. Money in the Bank, right? But just have him wrestle a match against somebody and have him lose the belt, the briefcase. Just do that instead. Could we do that instead? But no, he's got to like do, oh no, Otis is going to have to show up to court. What's Otis going to wear to court? Come on. Come on. You know this. He's going to wear a sleeveless suit with suit pants that are cut off into little shorts. And he's going to wear a dress shirt underneath, but somehow it's going to be a belly shirt. So the tie comes down past his belly button, right? but the belly, but this dress shirt gets cut off around here in the midriff. Mm-hmm. That's going to be hilarious. Oh, it's going to be so funny. I'm going to laugh about that for days. I can't wait to see who he gets to play his lawyer. Remember that thing where they had that guy come in to play the doctor who administered the urine test, and they named him Dr. Kirschenbaum? Because presumably naming him Dr. Jew would have been too on the nose. I can't wait to figure out what kind of crazy Jew name they give a lawyer, because in Vince McMahon's mind, all Jews are lawyers or doctors and vice versa. Anyway, Otis says, oh no, Tucky, we're in trouble. And Tucker says, no, Otis, you're in trouble. And I love that Tucker's like, not me. I'm not involved in this. No fucking way. I'm not going to court. Here's what I want. I want Tucker to represent Otis. I want Tucker to get all like dolled up and everything, like his hair all nice, put back in a nice little bun, glasses, clean shaven, beautiful suit. And you find out that Tucker went to law school. He dropped out 3 credits shy of getting his law degree. He runs circles around the Mrs. Lawyer. Tucker, I maintain, has the much brighter future in this business than Otis. He can do things like read. Because, again, Otis never read one word on that fucking piece of paper. He always had to have it read to him. I understand literacy. Adult literacy is a problem in this country. We have to be sensitive. But Otis can't read. So Sheamus and King Corbin are backstage. They're best friends now, conveniently forgetting the fact that they hated each other a month ago. The security guard comes by. It's the same guy who set up Big E. So Sheamus is like, hey, man. He basically, I owe you big. And he goes into all this thing about all the things I'm going to give to you. Anytime you need anything, you come to me. I'll help you out. And the security guard's like, oh, thanks. That's really great. Thanks, you. What was I going to say to you? Oh, right. Your car's being towed. So he leads Sheamus out to the same exact spot where he attacked Big E. And Big E's out there. And Sheamus runs away. And so Big E takes all his frustration out on the security guard, who was obviously a wrestler playing the security guard from the very beginning. So Big E hits the belly-to-belly on him on one car, and then is like, that's not enough. Drags him over to another car, he's going to do somebody else. He throws him, he puts him in the trunk of a car. Adam Pearce is trying to calm Big E down. Now, this is the thing, I'm pretty sure, this is where they're going to tell us, well, now Big E proved that he's not just a comedy act, because he committed assault. Like, judge, jury, and executioner, you set me up. No, I didn't, I swear. At that point, we're going to have a judge decide this. Yeah. Even if he said, you're right, it was me, I set you up, it was my idea. You still don't get to put the guy through a windshield of a car, Piggy. You got to go to jail for that shit. Now I know it's Big E being righteous. And Big E was great in this scene. But it still doesn't make it right. So your only two options are comedy, wop, wop, look at me, I'm throwing pancakes. I got pancakes hidden in my singlet. Whoop-de-whoop-de-woo, I'm a comedy act. Or I am going to murder an innocent bystander. Innocent. Innocent. But you get my meaning. There are only two options. You can't do anything in the middle. Yeah. So we get another vignette for who's probably Carmella. I like fur. This is the Emelina character, but Carmella's going to play her, I think, is what we're all assuming. Now it's time for the Samoan street fight. It's a street fight. I don't know what makes it Samoan. Do the heels have to wear grass skirts? What makes it Samoan? Again, this is, if you asked Vince, what makes a Samoan street fight Samoan, and he had to make it different. His only ideas were, everyone has to wear grass skirts, and at the end of every kendo stick is a little shrunken head. That is the only thing he could come up with to make something a Samoan street fight. Vince would say this. I know, because he had a team of Samoans, and he called them the head shrinkers, which I'm pretty sure is not a custom done by Samoans. So, it's a decent street fight, you know, big spots, whatever. The finish comes when Reigns and Corbin are in the arena alone, but Joe Uso has been thrown into the timekeeper's area, so he comes out of there with the belt, title belt. So he hits Corbin with it from the floor. So Reigns hits a spear, but then Jay hits the big Uso splash and he covers Corbin. So it's turnabout's fair play kind of between the cousins, where Roman is the guy who hit the actual winning thing and would have won, but he's not the legal man, so you got to wait for the other guy to do it. They did the same thing last week. But also, they did the same. Well, it wasn't a street fight, but it was the same match. It's Corbin and Sheamus, who, again, are just like, it's just, it's basically, it's heel A and heel B. That's all they are. Thing one and thing two from the Cat in the Hat. It's heel A and heel B. They don't have any, they're just heels. There's nothing definable. They're large men who are bad guys. They're like, if this was an episode of Masters of the Universe, it's Beastman and Triclops. It's Trapjaw and Merman. It's just two bad guys that don't really pose any threat to He-Man. They're just there to get in the way. They're a plot device. It's fucking stupid. Like, it's like, we really gonna do this shit with Sheamus and Corbin for months? The answer is yes, they really are. Anyway, they embrace in the middle of the ring. Been keeping it held from, it's really nice. Jay leaves after the embrace, and Roman immediately like goes into an icy cold steel stare. You touched my title belt, and I'm going to have to kill you. There you go. So that was SmackDown. I guess now it's time for me to do this Q&A sesh. So let's just go through music. Okay, so some of these are, I feel, unfair. Cause I honestly here we go. Zach Barber, who interacts with us a lot. Top five worst gimmicks of all time. Like, I mean, I got to narrow it down, dude. Top five. Well, my favorite ever is Fantasio. Is that how they pronounced it? Fantasio. He was that magician who was like a mime and a magician. And one, like his finishing move was like he released birds out of a hat that like flew past. Wasn't that what he did? Or was it like flowers? It was something he like out of a hat, like threw something in somebody's face. And they were distracted long enough that he would, like, kick him or something. One match Fantasio got. He got one match on Raw and gone forever. He was a mime and a magician. That's two worst gimmicks in one. I mean, that's a bad gimmick. Mantar was a bad gimmick. Who? Remember? What the hell was it? Bastion Booger. Bastian Berger was just a big fat guy who ate things sloppily. Was that his whole thing? He was big and fat, and he ate really sloppy stuff. That was it. And they repackaged Bastian Berger as Friar something. He's a friar. He was a monk. A big fat monk. It was obviously the same guy, but now he's wearing monk stuff. He was like Friar Tuck. It was around like the time that Prince of Thieves was really popular. So they were like, hey, let's make a Friar Tuck character. What's his gimmick? I don't know. He's fat. Anytime Vince is like, hey, let's make a character that I think is gonna be hilarious. Oh, great. Vince, what's hilarious about him? He's fat. That's also, don't kid yourselves, that's Otis's gimmick. Otis's entire gimmick is he's fat. Also, he can't read. It's sad. Was that five? I don't know. That's as many as I'm going to come up with right now because I've got a lot of these things to do. Some of these are actually serious, which is interesting. Okay, so besides the last days, this is from Nathan Farley. Hello, Nathan. Says, besides the last days of WCW, because that's everyone's least favorite, what era would you say was the worst booked? Well, there's a reason I decided to start this podcast. I think we're going to look back at this era, honestly, as just being some of the shittiest. When AEW takes over the world of wrestling, and like, I'm not an AEW stan, guys. I'm really not. I think they do some really good stuff. But I think they do also some bad stuff. But I trust them. I trust them to actually be good in 10 years a lot more than I trust WWE to be good in 10 years. And this era of their booking that's it. Like, they don't fucking know what they want. They're going to do the same shit over and over and over again. They're not using the right. They have the